Welcome to the Progress Your Health podcast with your hosts, Dr. Robert Mackey and Dr. Valerie Davidson, a husband and wife team who specialize in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and functional medicine. They're here to help you lose weight, balance hormones, and age gracefully. It's their mission to motivate, educate, and empower you to take your health to the next level. And now your hosts, hormone experts, Dr. Mackey and Dr. Davidson.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Progress Your Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson. And actually, I just want to go ahead and start off a little bit that normally with our podcasts, we do provide a transcription with it. But we're kind of talking about it last night. It kind of creates a little bit of a cog in the wheel in terms of getting out there as soon as possible for everybody to listen to, that we're actually going to kind of scratch the transcription.
Yeah, I know some people were downloading it. I'm not really sure, you know.
Not too many.
I don't know if that was really necessary. And you and I are just going to, you know, not that we wing it necessarily. We always have something to talk about, but this will, in some ways, will allow us to just be able to publish more episodes.
Yeah, exactly. But if there are those of you that really like the transcription, please let us know. Like we were saying, there's not a whole lot of people there's a lot of people listening to the podcast, but definitely not as many downloading the transcription. And it does take an extra couple of steps to get that done and then put it out there for everybody to listen to. So, but like I said, if there are those of you that really, you know, love that transcription, reach out and let us know so we can get a little bit of feedback. Yeah. But today we are, not that we talk shop after work. We do try to keep our patients and work, you know, at the office. But we were talking last night, and I was talking to Dr. Mackey a little bit about a patient that I had recently that was having some acne. And I mean, she's, you know, pretty much 40 years old, having cystic acne. So it's not, you know, I'll admit I get a pimple or two every once in a while, but actually having quite a bit of cystic acne on the neck, the back of the ears, the chest, the back, the face, the chin. And it was interesting, just to kind of, you know, give you a little bit of background here, is she had went to her dermatologist and her gynecologist, and not that they blew it off, but they really didn't have a lot to do other than, here, take these medications, specifically take a month of antibiotics, which she did not want to do, there's a kind of another prescription you can take daily to try to reduce down acne, and then some topical, you know, salicylic acid type of creams to put on the skin. But when we were talking about it, she said, they couldn't tell me why I'm 40 years old and I have this cystic acne, and I was the girl that had the most beautiful skin in high school that never had a pimple and I never washed my face ever. And why am I all of a sudden getting this? They didn't have an answer for it. So I thought that was really interesting because we certainly have an answer for it.
Yeah, yeah. At least somewhat of a partial explanation. First and foremost, the obvious thing would be, you know, stress level, right? Stress level is probably very high. We all have had that especially when we're teenagers, we have that stressful, you know, event. Maybe there's a date coming up. Maybe there's a test in school and all of a sudden you get a huge pimple on your face. Now, I was unfortunately in high school, I had a terrible complexion, so I can relate to having blemishes. It's not a fun thing. And I went to dermatologist after dermatologist, and that's all they did. They want to give you either, you know, at that time it was tetracycline, which I don't think is a great idea, you know, to treating your acne. And of course, every topical, you know, gel and potion under the sun, anything from Retin-A to everything else that just kind of dries your skin out and make it, you know, all flaky and inflamed and kind of, I don't know, it's just, you know, there's not really that many really good options for, you know, for acne. So that's first that kind of jumps to mind. But I know there's some other hormonal things that you're kind of getting at. So I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely working at it from a different picture is, like you said, you're familiar with the medications, you know. And honestly, gosh, how many years ago was high school?
Yeah, way too many.
Well, I'm going to say, you know, 20 plus years ago, it really hasn't changed much. They might have used tetracycline. They still use doxycycline and minocycline and different medications, which are basically antibiotics. You're taking them oral. Sure, they may clean up your skin, but it's, you know, taking this systemically, that may not be great for your gut microbiome, you know, your immune system. And then also, of course, there's the, what is that famous treatment that, why is it eluding me?
Proactive.
No. oral that they give to the teenagers. It's like Accutane. Yeah, sorry. Where'd my brain go? Yeah. But yeah, Accutane. But then, you know, you don't want to necessarily give a 40-year-old Accutane. And at the same time, you know, you have to check those liver enzymes. So it was just really interesting to me that, you know, and I get it. You all know it too. You know, you're the doc and they're just, I have this. Okay, here's a prescription. You're not really looking at sort of reverse engineering it and figuring out, well, what's the cause? And like Dr. Mackey said, you know, stress could be an issue, which stress has a lot of impact on our hormones. Being a female, especially, hey, when you turn 40, things start to change. So really looking at those female hormones plus those androgens was really important to me. So that's what we ended up doing with this patient. But, you know, we've done this a lot with many, many patients in the past. It was just something that kind of stuck with me this, you know, the last few days about this whole traditional medicine picture with acne for females. And then also kind of the picture that we want to look at hormonally, because you and I both know you got pimples on your face, even, you know, when I get one, and luckily I can put makeup.
One's too many. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not great to look in your, you know, look in the mirror when you have that. And especially when you don't really have control, I can understand, you know, hey, if I didn't wash my makeup off or exercised really hard or maybe didn't eat so great or a certain time of the month. But when you really can't pinpoint why you're getting these breakouts, it's really frustrating.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I said stress, certainly sugar. You mentioned about what you're eating. Certainly sugar could play a role in that. I know some people have referred to acne as, you know, as diabetes of the skin, you know, from an inflammatory perspective. I don't think that really is what's happening in a 40-year-old woman that's never had an acne problem, right? Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be a really good explanation. Maybe for a younger person that has a really severe case, you know, possibly. But there's this very, and you mentioned that she was in her, how old was she?
She's just about to turn, she's 39 going right on 40, you know, just in just a few months.
Yeah, right. So, you know, we look at that age transition or that, you know, that time in her life, she's going from one part of her life, you know, not exactly like the day she turns 40, but there is this kind of very specific hormonal transition as she's going from, you know, menstruating age into perimenopause, still menstruating, still having a regular cycle. Hormones are still fluctuating, but there is some changes that begin to happen, you know, during that process. And like you said, for whatever reason, there are some very specific things. You mentioned androgens, so a little bit more, you know, specificity about that. Androgens are basically two things, at least what we're testing for a lot of times, is either testosterone and or DHEA sulfate. So why do you see that so often in women in their 40s?
Well, you know, when our hormones are changing, and our hormones are changing ever since, you know, we have puberty and start as females, you know, get a period and everything's changing on from there. But the androgens don't necessarily change in regards to age as much as it can with stress, you know, different lifestyles. So the androgens like DHEA, like, which is a big, long, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious word that I can't pronounce, but we abbreviate it DHEA. And that comes from mainly the adrenal glands. That still acts like an androgen. Where us females have DHEA, but men have quite a bit more. That's why they have androgen-like features compared to us females. Same with testosterone. Testosterone isn't a reproductive hormone for a female. It is for a male, so they make quite a bit more of it. But we still make a little bit of it from the ovaries and then also from that conversion of DHEA to testosterone in the peripheral tissues. Like Dr. Mackey had mentioned about testing, when we test it, we do test the testosterone in the blood, mainly. There's other ways to do it, but in this case, you know, testosterone in the blood and DHEA sulfate, which is a metabolite of DHEA. Because when you test total DHEA levels in the blood, it's such a vast number and it's not very specific to really give us an idea if it's high, just right, or low. So when you do the DHEA sulfate, that's a lot more specific when you're going to do a blood test, just to kind of put that out there. But it's interesting when, you know, like I said, our hormones are changing. When you're coming up into the 40s, you're through the 40s, you're like me towards the late 40s, is those female hormones like the estrogen and progesterone can change a bit. And then they're not there to buffer those androgens. So that's why a lot of times you'll see that cystic acne happening in the 40s. Later with time, like, because people will say, well, what about when I go through menopause in my early 50s? My estrogen and progesterone are gone. Why aren't I getting a bunch of acne then? And that is true. Sometimes you see it, but for the most part, you see that in the 40s. And I think it's just the body is not ready to maybe become accustomed to that change.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, like now looking at something like PCOS, right? On a blood test, you're looking, you know, specifically, you're looking for those high androgen levels, and that's usually how they're going to diagnose it. You know, and if there's an ultrasound done, if there's any cysts on the ovaries, and acne is definitely one of those characteristics of someone that is, you know, that has PCOS, or as we like to call it, the spectrum of PCOS. There's not a clear cut, you know, diagnosis in every case. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. There's different variations, but you know, you're right. There's for whatever reason, we see it over and over and over. A woman gets to their 40s, and all of a sudden those androgens. Now, that's why I led with the stress, because I do think that most women in their 40s, they got kids, they got a full-time job, they're taking care of the household, they got so much on their plate that, you know, when your body is, you know, the cortisol requirement is so high, then the brain has to tell the adrenals to be able to keep up with all that. And now those, you know, specifically DHA, which is what, you know, pregnenolone and DHA, which is what cortisol and all those other hormones are made from, has to be upregulated, or the production has to go up. And then now all of a sudden it's manifesting as a blemish on your face.
Exactly. So like you were saying about the stress, so testing that, you can, you know, I'll see with patients that are like, I have this cystic acne, what am I going to do? I'm like, well, you know, let's figure out, is it coming from food, from stress, from hormones, maybe a combination of all of it?
Is probably a combination of all
exactly,
of it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Is looking for those higher levels of the DHEA and the testosterone, or looking for the lower levels of the estrogen and progesterone, which probably have fairly recently dropped down, you know, because they're in the 40s. So it's just recently those levels might have dropped a bit, not completely like in menopause, and the body just isn't used to that change. So those androgens become like, you know, the leader of the pack. So they start to lead that show. Now, one thing that also happens when, you know, hormonal change, stress in life, adrenal burdens, whatnot, is, you know, sleep issues. So if you're not sleeping well at night, not because you're burning the midnight oil, it's because you're just awake in the middle of the night and you can't sleep, that's going to have an impact on those cortisol levels and adrenal hormones.
Yeah. If you're awake at night, and when your cortisol is supposed to be low and you're awake, that means your cortisol is higher than it's supposed to be. And if that happens on a regular basis, you know, plus with the life stressors and everything else, now that, you know, that begins to start to put some pressure on your insulin, and that can further exacerbate that, you know, that kind of skin inflammatory process and just perpetuate the blemishes. And, you know, like you said, you know, cystic acne, nobody wants to have any acne at any point. But when you're 40 and all of a sudden you've never really had a blemish problem, all of a sudden it's kind of showing up out of nowhere. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of a big deal. You know, that's something that no woman wants to be dealing with when they're beyond their teenage years. They don't want to deal with it as a teenager, but certainly not later on.
And we all know that if you've ever had a cystic lesion or a cystic pimple, it's different than your usual one that you can just pop and it goes away in a day or two. Those cystic ones, you know, even one can last around 3 weeks by the time it goes away. And then a few more have popped up. It's like you got this vicious cycle. So it, you know, and like I'd mentioned, it's not fun to look in the mirror and see that when you don't really have anything that you can do about it. So I do think, you know, in the 40s, things do change, the sleep, the stress that can contribute. But then other people will say, well, okay, well, if the hormones are changing in your 40s, how come not all women in their 40s get cystic acne? Why is it just some and not all? And I would say, just in my own experience with my patient population, I'd say probably about 25% to 30% might start to get that cystic acne. It's not a huge number, but it, you know, it's not fun when you have it. So, well, if the hormones are changing and they're not buffering that testosterone and DHEA, and there's some lifestyle stuff and some sleep issues, why isn't 100% of women in their 40s getting cystic acne? And I think it comes down to a little bit of individuality, that some people are more sensitive to their androgens than other people are. Like, for example, and I'm sure Dr. Mackey has seen this too, that even when I test women that have acne in their teens or their 20s, their hormones, that testosterone and DHEA sulfate, or, you know, which is testing for the DHEA, is not raging super high. I think some people are just more sensitive to their androgens than other people are.
Yeah, yeah. I was just talking with a patient the other day and talking about androgen tolerance or testosterone tolerance, that some women can handle a good amount. You know, when we're prescribing it in a cream form, can't take testosterone orally or should not take testosterone orally. You know, so let's say a starting dose for a woman, let's say she's in menopause, just for an example. You give her 4 milligrams per gram. She does a half a gram daily, right? So she's getting 2 milligrams of testosterone as a starting dose. You know, for some women that could be just the right amount. For some women that could be way too much. And now she's having some of those issues. The three cosmetic things you're looking for is hair loss, hair growth, or blemishes. You know, and some women can tolerate very little testosterone. You know, so you have this, you know, again, this kind of wide spectrum. I think that's the same reason why teenagers, some get, you know, probably 25% that have a blemish problem, and 75% are okay. You know, it's that, you know, kind of canary in the mine sort of idea. There's a very segment. You can't predict who they are necessarily. It's just going to happen. I think the same group of women, you know, collectively, not this, you know, you had it as a teenager, you're going to have it in your adult years. Probably not, you know, because I don't think there's any correlation. That at least that's what I've seen, because I've asked a lot of women. They're like, why am I having this now? And they always say, I never had it as a teenager, and now I'm having it now. So I don't know what the difference is there. That's kind of interesting to me, though.
Yeah, I've kind of thought about that a little bit, and I can't, you know, just this is all just inferred from, you know, just experience, but whether some, you know, whether those hormones aren't being buffered and now they're more sensitive to it. I don't think women that are sensitive to their androgens have anything going on with their health per se negatively. They're just, hey, that's just you as an individual versus me as an individual. I don't think there's any kind of health complications. I don't think there's a big liver burden or anything going on there. But, and even with some of my polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS patients, some of them, they have their testosterone's high, but they still have this just gorgeous, flawless skin. And you'd think, you know, with your testosterone level at a, you know, an average female might be at 22 units per units per units, but, you know, 22, and then a PCOS patient at, you know, their testosterone up there at, you know, 70 to 95. Why aren't they breaking out? Why do you have this flawless skin that even I'm jealous of? Is I really think some people are just more sensitive to androgens than others.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, so that definitely is interesting. Now, I like, you and I both, topical, you know, topical is kind of a crapshoot when it comes to treating acne. We both like rather or prefer to do it more internally, both using prescription and or supplementation. So what are some of the things that you like to use for, you know, quote unquote acne?
Like you said, I do think going from the inside out, because if you talk to anybody that has a persistent acne issue, they have the best hygiene. They have the best products. They've probably tried every single product that their esthetician or they can find or Googled. They have very good skincare. So it's not really from the outside.
But sometimes too much though, like, you know, maybe more so in the teenager side, like you don't want to be scrubbing too much. You don't want to be doing any deep cleaning. It's not a dirt issue. So you don't want to be scrubbing your face. You want to be kind of gentle with your face, you know, yeah, you know, dermatology wise, it's either antibiotics or some kind of topical stuff. And I don't think that, I think they all have trade-offs. And I'm not really, you know, just like you said, the microbiome, I'm not a fan of taking antibiotics. There's, you know, there's a certain, I don't even know what strain of bacteria it is in your pores, and it's supposed to clear out the, you know, clear out that strain of bacteria. The minute you stop the, you know, the antibiotics, the acne comes back. I think that's how some of the over-the-counter, I mentioned Proactive, I think there's some of the, and I don't really have a lot of, you know, experience with those. You know, some say they work great. Maybe they just have good marketing. I don't really know. But I think also too, if you, I think they also tend to strip away that normal flora that's supposed to be there. We, you know, we have to realize, and I think a lot of people do now, we certainly didn't when I was a teenager, you know, giving out tetracycline like it was, you know, Chiclets or candy or something, that you want to protect that microbiome. If you're giving antibiotics on a regular basis, you know, maybe sometimes for months and years, what impact is that having on that normal flora that's supposed to be there? You know, and even, you know, for other things, UTIs and colds and flus and, you know, all that stuff, we're just taking antibiotics over and over and over. We don't have to necessarily go into the problem that too much antibiotic use causes, but, you know, too much antibiotic use is, I think the idea behind antibiotics is you should save them for when you absolutely really need them. You know, shouldn't be taking multiple courses over the course of a year or the course of your lifetime, because that's where it's going to, you know, in some ways, create some irreversible damage in some cases. But that, you know, that's just one aspect of acne treatment that I don't really, you know, I don't really care for too much.
Yeah. And like you said, when I'm sure everybody can hear a little bit of the background noise. Yeah. Sounds like someone's like working out in here. They're actually, it's our dogs working on their beef cheekbones.
Yeah, so a little banging, so hopefully you can't hear it too much through the microphones, but it keeps them busy, and you know, they're, you know, they don't move around or start fighting or something. So,
and they love being at our feet. So, and I love it myself too. So sorry if you're noticing that, but sorry, back to the gut microbiome, which I do think working on that gut microbiome can help with the acne, but a lot of times when it's hormonal, you know, you can take, you know, do all the anti-inflammatory dietary changes. You can do all the probiotics and prebiotics in the world, and it still doesn't necessarily help that skin. But I know that there is some aspect with certain types of acne, and I'll see that in all ages where they'll have it really coming from that gut. And for me, just, you know, this is just kind of umbrella thoughts here, is when it's hormonal, you typically see it on the jawline, the chin, the neck, even the back, the chest. When it's more like food related, I tend to see it more rashy on the cheeks, and it's more kind of rashy red, like kind of beefy looking, compared to hormonal acne where it's like, you know, you got these big bumps and they might be red. And if you're a picker like me, then they get even more red, but it just has a little bit of a distinctive, differentiation there. What do you think?
I was telling you the other day, I was on YouTube or something, and there's this one little section, and they have these little clips, video clips there. I don't know if they're Instagram stories or what they are, but there's like some pimple popping videos there. And I have to tell you, it was very satisfying to watch those. Like, I'm like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. But you see a couple of them go by, and I must have watched like 5 or 6 or 7 of them. I mean, it was really... I don't know, whatever. Just
there's something satisfying about
there,
it.
There was. I mean, it's kind of gross in a lot of ways, but there's just something, you know, very gratifying about seeing that, pimple getting popped. I know that there's a Dr. Pimple Popper or whatever. I think her name is Dr. Sandra Lee. She was a YouTuber, and then she got on TLC or Discovery or one of those network shows. I don't think her show is just about that anymore. I think the show is a little bit different, but at least that's, you know, how she started, just showing videos on YouTube of popping pimples. You know, I think she's a dermatologist or something like that, you know, whatever. But anyways, just a little segue or, you know, something that I kind of went down the little video, you know, you scroll up to watch the next video, and there's just a series of a bunch of videos like that I thought, oh geez, I'm kind of going down this rabbit hole, you know. And it wasn't a lot of time, it was only a couple of minutes, but I noticed myself being kind of somewhat mesmerized by watching these videos. I wanted to watch more of them.
Well, I'm sure you're not the only one. I've definitely gone down the rabbit hole on all sorts of topics.
Yeah, it's easy to do. If you or you're not paying attention, you can waste a lot of time looking at some of that stuff. We all know, you know, whatever, that those social media apps are all kind of designed to keep your attention. And, you know, we could probably talk about the mental impact that has on our dopamine and, you know, all that stuff at another time. But it was just interesting because I just did it the other day, and now we're talking about acne. It was, kind of interesting. So I asked you about, we got off about the antibiotics, other things, you know, from an internal perspective, other things that you like to use.
So if you're going to, there's so many different ways, you know, of course, lifestyle, supplementation, hormonal, supplementation, there's a ton of supplements. You know, if you think about Accutane, and Accutane does work. I mean, and I get it when people use it. I mean, the last thing you want to do is have your, you know, be, have your self-esteem feel like it's so low because of your skin. And trust me, it's not superficial to be there, because I talk to patients all the time about that. And Accutane will do the trick. Like I said, there's some side effects to it, definitely. But what is really Accutane in some ways will use sort of similar is high levels of vitamin A can really help the skin.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, Accutane is basically, you know, synthetic vitamin A, like a really high dose. I don't even know the conversion or what that really equates to, but it's a synthetic version of vitamin A, some kind of a retinoic, you know, base or retinol or retinoic acid or of some sort. But you and I, of course, just prefer to use straight vitamin A. Potentially at relatively pretty high doses that kind of freak people out sometimes. I've used in the hundreds of thousands of international units before. You don't do it for a long time, you know, maybe a few months, and then I usually titrate that dose down, and that does a pretty good job. You know, usually, you know, 90 days to 6 months, and their skin looks quite a bit different than it did before. So what else? Vitamin A is one. What else do you like to use?
If we're, you know, when you're thinking about the high levels of the androgens, trying to buffer them, with hormones. So let's say somebody is having more than just acne as a female in her 40s, looking at their estrogen and progesterone, typically that progesterone can be a little bit low. Sometimes I'll raise it up with actual prescription progesterone, or sometimes you can even use a little bit of Vitex, which is Chase Tree Berry. It's a common name. Vitex is the Latin name or something, or specific name.
Yeah, the Latin name. Yeah.
And using that can actually kind of help promote that progesterone to come up, because it can stimulate the luteinizing hormone, which is a signal, really a releasing factor from our pituitary in our brain. By kind of stimulating that LH, the luteinizing hormone, can thereby go downstream and stimulate the progesterone production for a female. So I found that can help clear up the skin. B vitamins, in particular B5, pantothenic acid, B6 is, I've seen that can actually help clear up the skin as well.
There's a product that I like to use from a company called Designs for Health, and they have a product called Acneutrol. You know, acne is kind of part of the word, right?
No, it's a funny name. It's a cute name. Trying to be like Accutane instead, it's Acneutrol.
So I've used pantothenic acid, vitamin B5 for adrenal issues. One thing we learned from Dr. Mitchell when we were in school, he used to use 500 milligrams three times a day of B5, which is good for cortisol production as a way to kind of retonify the adrenals. And that Acneutrol has like six capsules. You got to take kind of a lot of it. But in that one, it has like 2,500 milligrams of B5, which I thought was kind of interesting. So we all know the stress component that can play in acne production. But I just thought that was an interesting segue, as that being kind of the key ingredient for that product.
And even just something real benign and innocuous is evening primrose oil, which is a great way for females and their hormones without actually giving somebody hormones, can also kind of help buffer some of those androgens. Because it's not that you actually want those androgens to go away. Sure, a young gal with acne, high androgens, you give them birth control pills, it'll lower their testosterone about 20%. And then they're like, oh, my skin's so clear. But that's lowering something that's their body wants to make. Like, I have a lot of women, they have like borderline high androgens, and they love it. You know, their ambition is good, their drive is good, they have good muscle mass, they're competitive. So you don't necessarily want to alter someone's natural balance of hormones, but at the same time, it's more like trying to bring down those metabolites so they don't have the negative effects on them. So I do find that even like the evening primrose oil, the Vitex is great, even pregnenolone, or some people call it pregnenolone, is that can have a little bit of a factor on balancing cortisol and progesterone. So then that can help buffer that DHEA and that testosterone.
Yeah, now we've seen a few times that giving pregnenolone sometimes can cause the acne.
In sensitive people where it goes the other way. That's only about 10% though.
Yeah, maybe, I don't think it's very many. Mm-hmm. I've only seen it a couple of times where they come back and have, you know, given some feedback that it actually made it worse. Or they didn't have a problem to begin with, and then we gave it for some other reason, and then all of a sudden is that a cause and effect cause and effect kind of situation? You know, maybe not. But you're right. You know, those are all. Now you also mentioned evening primrose. Certainly, omega-3 fatty. You know, evening primrose is GLA, okay, gamma-linolenic acid, which is actually an omega-6 fatty acid. But then omega-3s, of course, they have kind of a really, they're kind of known for having this anti-inflammatory effect. Eric and I, our assistant, were talking about this issue the other day, just a couple of days ago. So it's interesting. Her and I were talking about that. Then you and I are talking about that. You know, not necessarily planned in that respect. But I like to use fish oil, cod liver oil or, something along those lines in situations like that. And she was saying that there is a TikTok girl or YouTube video or something about, somebody's skin, and somebody was using fish oil and someone told her, in the comments to stop doing it, and her acne got better after stopping the fish oil. Where I would actually use fish oil in that instance to actually improve, clear up the skin. So again, I don't know if that is a correlation, or just a coincidence that she stopped it she stopped the fish oil and her skin got better. Maybe it was some of the other things she was doing in her regimen. I don't know the full story, but it was just interesting that I mentioned that to Erica, and then we are having, you know, she kind of contradicted, you know, what I said based on some YouTube comment.
I do think that there, I have had a couple of patients, I would say very small, I can count them on both hands in all these years, that have had, excuse me, that have gotten acne from taking omega-3 fish oils. I actually have seen that, but like I said, it's a very small, like I said, I can count on my, maybe like seven people I can count off the top of my head, maybe not even that. So I do think there might be an effect on that, but I think along the lines of you, like you said, those omega-3s are really anti-inflammatory. I think they're actually really good for the skin. And one side, not to get down the rabbit's hole, but when you're looking at, you know, the facial skin and even the neck and what do they call it, the décolleté, is it has a lipid membrane. And when that lipid membrane becomes compromised, that's where you see some of the rashiness, some more pimples, more redness, more irritation. And so I feel like the omega-3s of fish oil can, and even maybe the omega-3s made from algae can have that effect too. But we've worked more with the fish oil, the omega-3s can have a positive effect on that lipid membrane on the skin to help with that integrity.
Yeah, right. Excuse me. Now, one thing I was thinking just as you were saying that maybe, you know, fish oil, omega-3 fatty acids are very prone to oxidation. You know, light temperature, you know, they do not have a shelf life. Like olive oil, or, you know, you can keep it on your shelf for a long time. It doesn't go bad. It doesn't become rancid. Butter, you can have butter. I remember when I was a little boy and all my older relatives, they'd have their little butter dish, you know, so you could, it was nice and soft. You could spread it on a piece of bread or something like that. No one really has butter dishes anymore. Not that I know of. Those are saturated fats that are maybe not olive oil. Olive oil is a monounsaturated fat. Butter is certainly a saturated fat, but they're stable. The point is that they're stable at room temperature. Omega-3 fatty acids are not stable at room temperature. So flax seeds, walnuts, omega-3s from fish, none of those are stable at room temperature. So maybe the ones that were actually making the skin worse were actually rancid oils. Because I know that's a big deal. Like, you should keep them in your fridge. You should not have them, you know, if you open up the container, whether it's a liquid or a soft gel, you should not be able to smell a very strong fishy odor. If you have a strong fishy odor, I would not take it, you know, for that exact reason. So maybe that's why it potentially could make the skin worse. You know, I'm just speculating here. I have no idea. And honestly, we deal with some acne, but it's not really our specialty. So it's not something that we do or see all the time.
That's really interesting. You're right. Cause I remember way back, we would poke a little needle in your fish oil capsules and smell it, just buying them from different places, different stores and warehouses, just to see if they were just already rancid sitting on the shelf.
And I know they've done some consumer report kind of thing where they've tested some of them, and there's a high rate of rancidity in omega-3 fatty acids across the board. So one of those things you just kind of have to be careful with, and being clear of where that product is coming from, who's making it, and making sure that they're doing some independent testing on that to make sure that the oxidation level is not too high. So that's just one idea. Why would we recommend it for the omega-3 anti-inflammatory effect, but why in, you know, now granted, you can't overreact to one case, right? You know, the internet these days, everyone's overreacting to everything in both directions. Either you do it because of that, or you stop it because of this. One positive or negative case is not enough to be able to make a decision, especially when it comes to clinical medicine. You kind of have to observe, you know, and that's where the practice of medicine comes from, because you're seeing, especially in our practice, we see the same things over and over and over and over. So you get good at those things because you're solving those problems. Now, granted, every person's a little different. And like you said earlier, there's a certain level of individuality. But when you start to see patterns that emerge over time, you know, and in our case, it's hormonally, it's symptoms, you know, there's these age patterns that begin to show up. I mean, patterns show up in a lot of different ways. And I would imagine that there's probably those types of patterns in all types of occupations. When you're looking at, I'm sure, accountants see patterns all the time, or lawyers, or, you know, whatever kind of specialty, that someone has as a profession, that you see those patterns just because you're immersed in one particular type of, endeavor on a regular basis.
That is interesting about the fish oil. So I'm think about that a little bit more. Yeah, I said, I do love it for the skin integrity, that lipid membrane.
I haven't done any research on that. You know, I haven't really talked to anybody else about that. It's just an idea that just came up. But still, vitamin A, cod liver oil, because of the vitamin A, it would be one of those things that I would recommend. I know cod liver oil used to be really popular, you know, 70 years ago, you know, grandma had it in the cupboard, and now it's kind of fallen out of favor a little bit. But it's still one of those kind of tried and true things. The only thing nowadays with cod liver oil, you know, is the vitamin A or the vitamin D that is in the cod liver oil. Is it fortified? Is it added to the cod liver oil? Or does it, you know, how much of that do we know is factory farmed cod? Is it wild caught? You know, there's a lot of issues when it comes to some of those things that, you know, who knows what you're getting sometimes on the public shelf when it comes to some of that.
Yeah, you had mentioned flaxseed or GLA. I think flaxseed actually is really good for the skin and for the mucous membranes. I use a lot for dry eye, kind of raise up that GLA, but that's also really good for the skin now that you're mentioning that.
Yeah. Now, flax oil, you know, granted as an omega-3 fatty acid, flax oil is an omega-3 fatty acid. It only contains ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, which your body doesn't really do much with that. But, you know, it's unfortunate for vegetarians because they might not want to do a fish oil, but ALA, there's a conversion process. Your body converts the ALA into EPA, which is one of those omega-3s. And for some people, that conversion is kind of sluggish and slow.
What about borage oil?
Yeah, those are all, you know, those are all non-EPA or DHA. Now, like you mentioned earlier about algae, there are some algaes that have, you know, their vegetarian sources that do have EPA and DHA. Those are the two omega-3s that you're really, when you take a fish oil supplement, that's really what you want, is you want the EPA and the DHA. Granted, those are really long words I'm not going to try to pronounce. Mm-hmm. Eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid or something like that. Those are the two that you really want that actually provide the brain benefit, the skin benefit, the anti-inflammatory benefit. You know, the ALA, your body doesn't do much with it. So that's why my preference is just a default to the fish oil based. Most of the time, I think nowadays fish oil is coming from like sardines and anchovies.
Yeah,
I think
the smaller fishes.
Yeah. Which is also probably good because, you know, the smaller the fish, the less heavy metal content. But most of the reputable companies are going to molecularly distill that fish oil. So all of the PCBs, all the things that we don't want, the heavy metals are going to be extracted and removed from that fish oil, which is, you know, I think is...
Depending on the company.
Yeah, right. Which I think is really, really important.
Absolutely. I agree too. What other, I would say also vitamin D, I think is really good for the skin. A lot of patients like to use collagen. It's very popular right now is to use collagen. I love collagen, great for the nails, the hair, the skin, but I haven't really seen much in the way of acne with that helping.
Yeah, no, I think it's more like for skin integrity, you know, that would be more kind of in the
cartilage.
Yeah. I just had a thought. Now I lost it. It'll come back to me. Prescription-wise, that's what it was. I know that we have both used, which is, you know, very conventional treatment, but using spironolactone.
Yeah, I'll use spironolactone, which has been around for a long time. It was originally made to be a blood pressure medication because it is a diuretic, so dropping the water drops the blood pressure, but nobody really uses that for that anymore. You mainly use it because it does reduce the androgens, so you want to reduce down some androgens like that testosterone, you can use spironolactone. It's pretty well tolerated, but like you said, it's a medication. Do you really want to get on that Band-Aid? So what I use it for is when I have somebody that's pretty upset, they don't want to wait for this process to happen. They want that acne to go away now. They want, you know, they got school pictures. They got an event coming up. They want it gone. Is sometimes just to really kind of get the process moving is I'll use some spironolactone and we'll use it for a while and then try to wean off of it and then try to add our foundationals with the supplements I had talked about, maybe even trying to balance those hormones, working on the sleep, working on the adrenals as we're going to slowly wean off. But it's a great way to just go ahead and try to clear up the skin. Cause like you said, even being a teenager, you probably, you know, it's not fun to be able to look in the mirror and see pimples.
Yeah. You know, it's very gratifying. When I was a teenager, I went to a ton of different dermatologists, got the same answer over and over and over. It's like, okay. And then, this is well before the internet, this would have been the early 90s. late 80s, early 90s, when I was in junior high and high school. And I had a bodybuilding magazine. Back then, Muscle Fitness was a really popular magazine. And I found a little ad in the back. They used to have like little classified ads. And there was a thing back there for $5.95 for a little booklet on acne treatment, like natural acne treatment. And I was probably 16 at the time. My dad was a very strange man. Like he was in the Korean War. He wanted to be a cowboy. He worked in the railroad, you know, very much blue collar. But he was kind of obsessed with vitamins. His favorite book was Earl Mandel's Vitamin Bible. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, he had all this kind of his lifestyle. He smoked. He probably drank too much. His diet wasn't very good. But he had this interest in natural things, right? You know, honestly, it's probably somewhat shocking and amazing that I do what I do now because of that, some of that influence, even though he wasn't very congruent in some of his beliefs as far as what he did, you know, lifestyle wise. I remember, you know, I ordered this little thing and it had a bunch of different recommendations in there for your skin. And this was really before multivitamins and stuff, but still supplements were around. Obviously it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that long ago. And he went through the, you know, Earl Mandel's Vitamin Bible and my little pamphlet. Literally, it was like a few pieces of paper stapled together, like no book, no spiral bound anything. It was the chintziest little thing ever, $5.95. It took about, you know, 2 weeks to come in the mail. But I followed the protocol in there almost to the T. My dad helped me set it up. He put out my little vitamin dosages for the day. You know, take this in the morning, take this at lunch, take this in the evening, kind of thing. And I also stopped drinking milk. I used to be a Mountain Dew fiend back then, and I stopped drinking soda. Within about 6 months, my skin was pretty much cleared up, and I didn't have to do any more prescriptions or anything after that. My skin's been, you know, obviously good ever since, but, you know, between, it was like a nice little project. I remember one time I used to play hockey, you know, amateur hockey, in the town that I lived in. And we were playing in Hibbing, Minnesota. I lived in a town called Superior, and my dad had it. You know, he had empty vitamin bottles. I think one was an aspirin bottle and a bunch of different empty bottles of things, and he had my vitamins in there. And he put like 3 days worth of vitamins in one bottle. And he didn't tell me that he did that. And after one of the games we played, I took all of them at one time. And it had like zinc and, you know, nothing dangerous, right? Now it's kind of laughable. But there was enough in there that I got nauseous. I started throwing up. And one of the moms they had a van. So I drove with that family, and because I played with their children. They had two brothers that played on my team. And she got super nervous, you know, because she's, you know, carting me, you know, 150 miles from home. And here I am. There had to pull the van over on the side of the highway so I could throw up.
Because you took a bunch of pills.
Because I took a bunch of pills, vitamins. I told her it was just vitamins.
You're a teenage boy that took a bunch of pills and started throwing up. I could see where she might be a little bit
She's
concerned.
Freaked out. Yeah, she's freaked out. Calling poison control at the hospital in Duluth. And I said, oh, no, it's fine. I just took too many vitamins. I knew that I was fine, even though I was throwing up, you know, whatever. But that was just a little traumatic story. But
that's really awesome that you had done the prescription medications and dermatologists, but by changing your, you know, like I said, the dairy and Mountain Dew, you know, the sugar and the
when the Mountain Dew, the sodas, they came in, like, that's when the liter bottles just came out. And I used to drink like two or three of those liter bottles a day. It was ridiculous.
Two or three?
Probably at least one or two. Yeah. I drank a lot of Mountain Dew back then. Like,
did you replace it with water when you stopped drinking it? What did you drink instead?
You know, anyone that's ever had an acne problem, like really, that is very motivating to get rid of that acne problem, right? You know, and I know you've had some patients too. They will do whatever it takes to get rid of that acne problem most of the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it set in there, you know, cut out refined sugar. And and then it, like I said, 3 to 6 months. I don't remember the time frame because it's so long ago now, but it cleared up almost like it seemed like it was like almost overnight. Like it cleaned up, it cleared up relatively quickly. And my, you know, I would say probably my, 10th grade, junior year, even into my senior year in high school. So what are you, 15, 16, 17? You know, my complexion was not great. I had way more blemishes and, that kind of, oily, kind of greasy face that no teenager really wants to have. Like I said, shortly thereafter, it was all gone. It was really nice. So, anything else, that's just a story. Story from a long time ago. So anything else that you would, recommend?
Oh gosh. Now you got off the subject a little bit, but, yeah, I guess like I talked about maybe I'm talking more about females, balancing the hormones, but now you've kind of brought up yourself, which would be men, and they're of course, they have lots of testosterone, so that could definitely contribute to acne. So with men, probably trying to bring down those testosterone metabolites.
Yeah, well, men, I think, are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen one case of male, ever had a male patient for acne.
You know what, when I put some men on testosterone cream or testosterone replacement, a few of them will break out and then we have to back it down. So it definitely, some people are more sensitive to that.
Yeah, I've seen a few men, these are adult men and they'll get like bacne. They'll get, blemishes on their back or something, or they might get it on their thighs or something like that.
Yeah, so I would, but you're right. I wouldn't say I'd necessarily see men, like women, where they're like, I never had acne, or all of a sudden I'm really getting a lot of acne and I'm in my 40s. That's usually that kind of that hormonal component. You're right. I don't really necessarily see that with men, but you'd mentioned something about your vitamin mix, the zinc.
Well, I think that's what made me throw up.
Taken zinc on an empty stomach and oh my goodness, that is like instant throw up.
Yeah. I think I took I took 250 milligrams or something. I took zinc is really popular now with all the, all this,
virus stuff,
whatever. So an average dose, maintenance wise, you're going to take every day is, between 15 to 30 milligrams.
Yeah, maybe 50 for a man.
Yeah. Maybe up to 50. But you don't want to take too much for too long. Because too much zinc, let's say you're above 50, you're closer to 100, that can actually cause some immune suppression. But if you're sick, like you actually have symptoms, you can actually increase that zinc up to 100 milligrams or
short amount of time,
maybe 120 milligrams. Mm-hmm. Like a little protocol, zinc lozenges usually are anywhere between 5 to 10 milligrams each. Some are 12, some are kind of some weird numbers. If it's 12, one of them that we used to recommend was 12 milligrams. And I would tell people they can take up to 10 a day while they're sick. Okay. But once they're sick, then they go back down to a lower dose. Someone asked a question the other day about a vitamin C, zinc kind of protocol. I don't think there really is one. But the point that did come up is if you do take a higher amount of zinc over a long period of time, you should probably balance that with a little bit of copper. Mm-hmm. Because zinc and copper compete, and you can kind of create a, I don't know if that, I've never seen
it. You just need to be in a balance.
Yeah. I just never seen a copper deficiency before, but it's one of those things that, people probably too big of a deal about, necessarily. But if you're taking a certain amount of zinc, you take 1 to 2 milligrams of copper and it's supposed to, balance everything out. But yeah, I don't know if it was either like 5 or 7 days worth of zinc. It was a whole bunch and it literally took like 15 minutes. I'm like,
at least you didn't do it before the hockey game and then you're throwing up on the ice.
Well, that's why I didn't do it, because you don't want to be taking a bunch of vitamins, while you're going to go play hockey. So I had them in my bag as to take afterwards. My dad had set them all out, but he didn't tell me that he put multiple days in there. So, just a little aspirin bottle, and I just took them all, and I'm like, I don't feel so good. And then the mom, she's like panicking because
I don't blame her.
She doesn't want to bring home a hurt child back to somebody else's parent, as she's basically chaperoning. So she was really nervous. But nonetheless, anyways, the good old days. Anything else to say about acne, or can we wrap this one up?
No, and I'm sure a lot of you listening probably might even identify and have some questions about this. So please, write in. Like we said at the beginning of the podcast, we really do enjoy your questions and comments. So feel free.
Yeah. Till next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Progress Your Health podcast. If you like what you've heard on this podcast, please give us a positive review on iTunes. This allows us to spread our message, grow our audience, and help more people around the world. For more information, visit our website at progressyourhealth.com.